Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Sometimes I forget perfection is nonsense. It's just the way it is. Life gets rough around the edges. Peace is just a perspective shift away. And Rebecca, Emily, and Kate are here to help. This is Mom struggling well. 'Cause we're all in this together. Just Mom Struggling Well.
Welcome. You're listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the podcast that helps you love your actual life so you don't need to run away from home. We believe perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away.
We're back today with another interview, so you can add this to your Struggle Well toolbox. Once a month, you're going to hear one of us have a conversation with someone cool who we know is going to add value to our Strug community.
So today's my interview with Sophie Hudson. She's been on the show before, but she's such a delight that I needed to have her back. She's written a bunch of books. You're probably familiar with them, but if not, get familiar with them. Her most recent book is a devotional for adolescent girls. And since I have a teen at home, I really wanted to talk to her. She has worked as kind of like a dorm mom, but at high school. And she recently retired from that and is going to be doing some other things, but she's just such a great resource and just lovely. She's Southern and just...
Does she know Honeybee?
She's kind of like Honeybee.
She is kind of like Honeybee.
She loves God. She's funny. She's positive. And I don't know. I want to be like her when I grow up. So I wanted to interview her.
Aw, I can't wait. Does she have kids?
She has one son and he's about to leave. So we also talk about being an empty nester. He's heading off to college and what that's like and working with adolescent girls and what that's like and mom-daughter dynamics and what that's like. So a lot of good stuff. We had a great chat.
Awesome. And I know that the Strugs are really struggling with teenagers right now. I'm feeling those vibes. So I think this is going to be so good for them. I can't wait to hear it.
Let's get started.
All right. So Sophie Hudson, tell the listeners who you are.
Oh, goodness, Emily. I don't know who I am. I'm a writer. I'm a podcaster, still not super great at the podcasting, even though I've been doing it a really long time. I'm not retired. I feel like I'm too young to be retired, but I recently left a job after 21 years in that job.
That is actually what I want to talk about first. So I love that you said that. So what was your title there? Were you like a guidance counselor?
No, I wasn't a guidance counselor. I started off as an English teacher. And then I moved into a job about 8 years ago that was called Dean of Women. And it was more of like a discipleship job as much as anything. It was just sort of like walking with girls through the day-to-day stuff. So I was a little bit of kind of an on-campus mama, a place to go if you needed to cry or vent, if there was friend drama, that kind of stuff, just sort of kind of an advocate for the girls at school. And then if things were super serious or if there was something that was really concerning, then I would take that over to the guidance counselors because they were the real like experts in how to handle stuff like that.
How old are these girls?
So I worked mainly with the high school girls, so 9th to 12th grade. And then I worked with our junior high girls too, which they were 7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
So
I love that there's that position.
Yeah. It was, I'm going to tell you, I went into it, you know, as somebody who had worked with teenagers for a long time and somebody who had been a teacher, and I thought I had a pretty good lay of the land in terms of what girls were dealing with. And what I did not know, Emily, was a lot. What I didn't know was a lot. And what I didn't understand was, I think sometimes as a teacher, you thought, well, somebody just needs to get in there and fix this stuff. But there's really no fixing the kinds of things that teenage girls are dealing with. You really just, I mean, I think more than anything, what I did was listen. I just listened and would occasionally hand somebody a Kleenex or a piece of dark chocolate.
So tell me what they're dealing with. Like, I have a teenage girl. Mm-hmm. I saw just this morning on Instagram, somebody posted a thing and said, having teenagers is like having a haunted house. You see something out of the corner of your eye, and then you hear a moaning, and then a door slams.
So good. The thing that I saw, I think the thing that surprised me the most, and maybe this is because I'm kind of a Gen Xer to my core, you know. Okay. I mean, I've never really thought anybody was super concerned with me or my performance in things. I've never put a ton of pressure on myself. Like, that's just not ever been my thing. I think the thing that surprised me the most was the amount of pressure that they put on themselves, even if they don't verbalize it, and the degree to which perfectionism can boss them around. I think that the girls that I was working with were dealing or were kind of living at a level of achievement that I don't think I've hit yet. You know what I mean? And so, but they are really conscientious about that kind of thing, but man, it wears on them. And so what I would see a lot of the time is that they could come in and sort of give the appearance of everything being light and breezy for, you know, 6 or 8 weeks. And usually about that midterm mark, when you got about halfway through a semester, the facade would start to crack a little bit, and they would really, like, the fact that they felt so much pressure would start to seep through a little bit. And so there's, you know, when you put a lot of pressure on yourself, then there's a lot of sadness that gets connected to that. There's a lot of feeling like you've disappointed people that gets connected to that. Or there's this sort of like general sense of overwhelm that stays with you all the time because you can never get out from under this to-do list that you've created in your head.
Where's it coming from?
You know, I don't know that I've figured it out yet. I mean, I think that the go-to place to blame is always, well, it's social media. These girls are just inundated with social media. And there is something to that. I ran into one of my girls from school this past weekend, and she said, you know, I finally just took all social media off my phone, which is interesting to me because I feel zero pressure from social media. But again, Gen Xer, I didn't grow up with it. I didn't have a lot of other voices coming at me.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. And then I think part of it is just, and this may be a generational thing, fortunately, girls have so many opportunities now. You know, they consider things that I would have never considered when I was their age. You know, maybe they want to go overseas and live for a couple of years, or maybe they want to get early admission into like a physical therapy, like early tract, where they go into college admitted into PT school. You know, I mean, they've just got all these things.
Lots of opportunities.
A lot of opportunities, which is so awesome. And that's absolutely how we want it. But I think because of that, it gets dialed up earlier in terms of feeling like, you know, high stakes to...
We have to figure it out.
Yeah, I got to figure it out.
It's kind of like when I lived overseas for a while, and then when you come back and you realize there's like 97 cereals and I've been choosing between 3.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. There are 97 cereals. And so, yeah, I think part of it is there's all this opportunity. You know, when I was growing up, I never really looked far and wide for colleges. I was just going to go somewhere in my state, you know, and so they'll start college visits as sophomores, which, by the way, did I ever take a college visit? I did not. Like, it's just everything is a deal. Everything is a process. And so I just think they naturally feel some of the pressures that are attached to that. And then on top of that, you know, people are dealing with real issues in their families, real issues with their mental health, real issues with their physical health. And so I think this perception that I've not only got, I have to handle all these things, and I have to handle it in like the most awesome, productive, innovative,
post-worthy
way. Yeah. I think it just naturally, it starts to feel like a lot sometimes.
Okay, so I do want to talk about that more, but then why did you leave that job? Because it seems like such a great fit.
Oh, listen, it was so much fun, and I miss the girls so much, but there was something that happened a couple of years ago, Emily. We went into something called quarantine. I don't know if you remember.
I've heard
this.
Of that.
Yeah. And so there was a couple of things. I'd felt like for a little bit that I would probably, our son's a senior. And so I thought, yeah. Well, I'll probably leave after his senior year. I'll probably stay until he graduates, just because for a long time I have juggled my writing life and my podcasting life and my life at school. And my home life. And it was a lot, but I didn't always feel like it was a lot because it's just what I did. You know how, I mean, you know what it's like to just, I'm just going to plow through and I'm just going to find little cracks here and there where I can fit stuff in. And
yeah.
So then in March, when we went home, suddenly it was like, oh, this is a different way of living. And yeah. And it was different than like a summer that I would get, because our summers were always pretty planned and there were lots of activities. But suddenly when we were just home, you know, and like a big day was for me to go to the park down the street. Yeah. And so I think during that process, I was like, okay, I am a healthier person with this degree of margin. Now, not that I wanted to stay, you know, at my house forever, but sure. But like I just, it felt so different mentally, emotionally, spiritually to take that piece away. And then what I found was I loved having more room creatively to write and to podcast and all that stuff.
Okay.
So I'd already committed to go back the next year. So I did. But I don't know. It was probably about this time last year. We decided that I think this is it, because it was just, it was a lot.
Okay. So having done that.
Yes.
Always when you're in your house and you're having all the margin and you're just swimming in margin and then you go back to school. And like, I saw you posted that, you know, you're taking down your office of 20 years and yeah. Everybody's there saying goodbye. Surely you were just like, I don't know if this is, I'll just stay a little bit longer. did you second guess that choice? Cause it's hard to make big changes.
Yeah.
And then know if you did the right thing or not.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, I'm a 9 on the Enneagram. Uh-huh. So it's hard for me to process out, like to look down the road. I'm really okay. Good at looking back.
Okay. But not forward. As much. Okay.
So I think what happened, by the time I made the decision and I told my principal, who I still adore, and I could have worked for him forever. I could have worked for him for the rest of my life. When I told him, I just don't know. I had such peace that it was the right thing. Okay. That it's one of, I have not second guessed that decision nearly to the degree I thought I would on the other side of it. So even when I was taking down my office, I had a day actually back in the spring, because a lot of girls would eat lunch with me every day. And there were some uh-huh. girls from my son's grade who were eating lunch with me, and they were being so silly and laughing their heads off. And I had like a moment, I can still see it in my mind, where I was watching them. I was so just entertained and delighted by them, watching them interact with one another and laugh their heads off. And I thought, very clearly thought, I love this so much, and I still know it's time for me to leave.
Oh, good. That's so, really good.
Yeah. So I had a lot of peace about the timing of it, about, you know, all the reasons why it was the right thing and the best thing. And okay. I still think it has been the right thing and the best thing. Even though I went to dinner a couple of nights ago with four of the senior girls. You know, like I still see them, I still love them, but I really know that it was time for me to transition out of that part of my life.
Yeah, I get the missing some parts of it mixed up with that was not the right choice. Do you know what I mean? It yeah. kind of gets all swirled around and I can't yeah. tell. Okay, so having a son who's a senior.
Yes.
I do want to talk about the girl issues, but I just want to talk about what's that like as a mom? Is he leaving for college?
He is, but okay. He's actually staying in Birmingham for college, which we did not expect.
Okay.
So he's not going to be that far away, although I don't think we'll ever see him. I'm going to tell you that having a son who's a senior, this senior year situation has been the most fun.
Okay.
I have loved it. And I think part of the reason why I haven't been overly sentimental about it is because I worked with teenagers for so long and I worked with seniors for so long. So I know like this is inevitable, right? Like this is
sure.
This is something that we want to happen, that needs to happen. We need to move them into the next phase, whether that next phase is college or serving somewhere or going to work, whatever it is. Like we move out of the high school phase. Yeah. So it's been a ton of fun. It's been fun to watch him he's a person who is sort of all in with whatever he does. So it's been fun to have a front row seat for that, just to see, you know, he's going to go to all the games. He played football. And so he was all into that for the first part of the year. But he also does show choir, and that's about to ramp up. And so we're going to be into that this spring. But it's been fun to see him, I don't know, be who he is and to see how that happens. You know, I think there's a point when kids are in junior high and you go like, how's this going to work out? Like,
yes.
How's this?
I'm currently in that. Lots of question marks. Some exclamation points. What?
Yeah. I don't. Is this quirky or is this?
Or should we seek a professional? Yeah.
What's happening here? And it's been really fun just over the last couple of years, but this year in particular, just to see who he is, you know, and how so much of who he is just how he's hardwired. You know, I think we like to think when kids are little, we're going to craft them into these people that we've had in our minds. And guess what? That is not how it goes. Ma'am. And so I think when you figure that part out and you're like, oh no, my job is actually just to help this person be who this person is supposed to be. There's a relinquishing of control that happens when you realize that. But also then that's when the fun really begins.
It's true. I used to think they were like, you know, they're like clay and you're like making, you're deciding, do I want a vase or do I want a bowl, you know?
Ashtray.
Yeah, an ashtray. I tell my daughter, like, I'm basically your guardrails to keep you from going off the cliff.
100%.
Like, that's how much shaping I'm doing. I'm just helping you not die.
Yes. I mean, my friend Melanie and I have talked about this a ton. Like, you realize, especially once they hit kind of, I don't know, middle school, high school, you really become a coach more than you become an instructor. And because when they're little, you're given a lot of instructions. And then, you know, as they get older, it's more like, hey, maybe not that way, you know, or maybe just adjust just a tiny bit. You're just helping them run their routes a little bit. And so, I don't know. So I've loved having a senior. And I think this part of parenting for me has been, it's for sure been my favorite. I mean, I enjoyed all of it, but I really like having somebody who's older. You know, last night he made came in from something and made a chicken sandwich with a lot of really inventive ingredients, and just seeing that whole process and going, you know, I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know if this is really going to be the palette you were after.
Well, what was on there? I have to know.
Oh, he cooked some chicken in the air fryer, and then he, you know, the better than bouillon stuff that you put with butter. He just put that straight up on the bun.
Oh dear.
And I was like, that could be a little bit of a salt lick situation.
Yes.
And then there was some cheese. There was some buffalo sauce. There were just a variety of condiments that went onto that thing. And then in typical senior boy fashion, he's like, it's good. You know, he's like Joey Tribbiani, you know, like meat good, pudding good.
Oh
so,
my gosh.
Anyway, it's tons of fun. I've loved it.
I feel like I need a glass of water after thinking, I mean, the buffalo sauce and the better than bouillon, each of them alone, they're standalone products.
I know. They really are standalone. And so when I saw the better than bouillon on the bun, I said, hey, and this is, to me, this is another difference between parenting little kids and then somebody who's a senior in high school. If he had been little, I probably would have been like, oh my gosh, you cannot eat that by itself. It's way too salty. You know, I would have come in and tried to fix it. And last night I was like, huh, we'll see how it goes. Okay. But yeah, he made it work. And then when he finished it, he said, it was pretty good. He said, now maybe I should have mixed that better than bouillon up with some butter, but it wasn't bad. I said, all right. You know, he probably did get up and drink about four glasses of water before he went to school. But
that's
anyway.
The thing is, sometimes, at least with my daughter, even if she's wrong, she's not admitting it.
No, they're going to stick with
She'll
it.
She'll go down with that ship.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Moms into Fitness is designed to help you achieve optimal health without going to extremes. This is a new sponsor for us, and I'm pretty pumped about it. So it was founded by Lindsay Brin. She's a specialist in women's fitness. She has Christian faith, Midwest roots, a husband, and three kids, and she's super passionate about helping moms. And because we know that our kids are always listening, Lindsay talks about balanced health, not losing weight or being unhappy with your body. And I gotta say, it's not just about the words that she's using. I think she's modeling some really great stuff in the outfit habits that she's choosing as well. She's about celebrating non-scale victories like surviving the amusement park, carrying a toddler on your back all day, or confidently saying yes to that kayak adventure while you're on vacation. She has fitness programs for beginners to advanced, done in as little as 15 minutes. You can choose from running, HIIT, bar, pre or postnatal, low impact, Pilates, strength training, kickboxing, and so much more. So you show up and let Lindsay do the rest. You can follow a laid out calendar or show up for a daily 15, just a quick 15 minute workout that rotates each day. But there are really so many things to choose from. Here's my experience with Moms Into Fitness. I went from thinking about working out to Googling Moms Into Fitness, signing myself up, taking a quick survey, and launching a class in about 15 minutes. So if you are a little last minute like me, or you have to really jump on it when you have the desire to exercise, this is a great tool for you. I think she really cares about mom time and how little of it we have, because this survey kind of like suggested, ooh, this class would be good for you, or pop into this one. She also had some really great tips like, hey, you don't have exercise bands, go ahead and wrap your leggings into a knot and use that instead. That made me feel like she's kind of meeting me at my level. So get this, you can have individual attention directly from an expert, talk with Lindsay to find the best program for you, or fill out that survey I was talking about, and then she emails you with a customized plan. Mom Struggling Well listeners get 50% off 3 months. So that's only $7.50 for the entire month. This includes a free week, so there's no commitment if you don't like it. Go to momsintofitness.com/MSW and use code MSW50 to start nurturing you. I love that. Don't you love that?
Okay, so teen girls.
Yes.
I have one, and it's every day's an adventure. Mm-hmm. And I've been practicing my bland face where, like, I just don't.
Yes.
Someone said that to me and it never left me. And I just really try to practice, like, let everything go limp. Yeah. It's real hard. I feel like everything that I do and say can and will be used against me.
Sure. It's high stakes, Emily.
It's really hard. So tell me, like, what do moms miss? Because you get to talk to a bunch of girls who they're telling you things they probably wouldn't tell their mom, obviously. And there's there's an amount of things we need to know and amount of things that we don't need to know or want to know as moms of teenage girls. But, like, what do you think moms miss?
First of all, I think everybody's doing their best for the most part. Like, everybody really is trying to do the very best they can. I think there's one sort of temptation that comes with being the mom of a teenage girl. And I was really only able to kind of put words to this after I left, because I would see it play out a lot when I was in that job. But I was like, what's this dynamic? I can't figure out what it is. And then it finally occurred to me after I had some distance. There can be a temptation, I think, when you're the mom of a teenage girl in particular, because, like you said, you have to practice the bland face. You can't react to anything. You can't show too much enthusiasm, or they'll back right off of whatever it is.
It is opposite day. If they know you like it, they don't like it.
It's opposite day. So I think here's what happens sometimes. In an attempt to just get some kind of reaction, like it's like wandering through this brush laden trail where you're just searching for something, anything we can bond over, where we can share some emotion together. Here's what I think happens. I think that there's an easy place for that to happen that's not always healthy, and it's where we bond over what we hate, or we bond over who we think is not acting great, or we bond over who's making poor decisions. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like a cheap sort of bonding, because what we're doing essentially is we figure out, like, because teenage girls generally know who they feel frustrated with. And so when mom also gets on that, like, here's all the 49 reasons why we're frustrated with this person, we don't like them anymore. Listen, then all of a sudden it's fellowship, right? Like, we're firing on all the cylinders. But I think there are a couple of negatives that come out of that. One is that the go-to from daughter to mother tends to be like a rundown of all the, maybe not gossip, but just like becomes kind of a negative thread that goes through conversation all the time in terms of who we're mad at. And not that they shouldn't be honest about where they're struggling, but I think as moms, we have to kind of get a level or two above it and have maybe a 30,000 foot view of it, as opposed to being on ground level with the girl. And then I think the other thing that happens is moms, is we can start fishing, you know, for all the just, and again, it's just, we want to be on the same page with them. We want to experience some sort of emotional bonding. And so I think we just have to be careful that we're doing that in healthy places, because it's easy to do it in unhealthy places. And what I've seen happen is it really can become toxic, because then suddenly you get moms who are deeply immersed in the drama that goes on with teenage girls.
And that's a good point. Yeah.
And when that happens, it gets real hard to deal with stuff. You know?
Especially because you're only getting the one side of the story and nothing really makes sense.
And I had to be so mindful of that, because if a girl would come in and talk to me about something she was dealing with a friend, and I would almost always say, I don't need names. Like, I don't need to know who you're talking about. And I don't need to necessarily even know everything you think they've done. Just, I need you to tell me how you feel. You know, that whole thing, like, I need you to use some I language and not some she language. But, you know, even I would find myself sometimes sort of in the middle of drama, and it's difficult to navigate even when you think you're Switzerland in that situation. You know?
So how do you know when to intervene and when not to intervene, involving bullying and all that shenanigans?
I mean, obviously if there's any kind of physical harm, but if you see cold hard evidence and text messages or on social media or whatever of just ugliness, then I think you have to get in the middle of it. I have a friend who has three daughters, and you know, and she says, and she's right, she says, my girls need to see me advocate for them. And that is absolutely true. Like all our kids, no matter the gender, they need to see us advocate for them. But you just have to have wisdom about when that's necessary. But obviously if something is causing physical or psychological harm, you got to move. Like, you got to get in it. But if it's just, you know, like, well, we were all going to the dance together and I said, let's go eat here. And they were all like, no, we're going to eat here. Like, you don't have to get in that, you know, like they can sort out dinner. That's going to be fine. But when it's higher stakes, absolutely. You know, you got to get in there and advocate.
How would you say that you, maybe it's just easier for you being not the mom with all these girls, how would you say getting them to open up? You just sit there and look at them?
I mean, it's honestly, I've thought about this for whatever reason the last couple of days. Listen, they can sniff out somebody trying to get information from them, or somebody who's, you can't give them too much effort. You know, I think you just kind of have to live your life and be available. And I think there are a couple of things that pay off when you're building relationships with that age group. One is just to be somebody who's willing to listen, who's not trying to correct every single thing you hear them say that you disagree with.
That is me right there. I want to turn every couple sentences into a life lesson.
Oh, listen, as a parent, I get it. You know, I mean, I so get it. And then I think the big thing, honestly, is like learning to laugh with them. When you laugh with them and you have that shared sense of humor, it breaks down whatever resistance they have. And I listen, and you can't go into it with an agenda. I never thought, like, I need these girls to open up to me. That was never my deal. My deal was always like, I want to love these girls and I want to serve these girls. And so I think if you're focused, if you're working with you know, maybe people work with teenage girls in an after school program or in their churches or in their communities, whatever. I think if your heart is to love and serve them, the relationship will follow. If your desire is maybe more like, I'm going to impact these girls and change their lives forever, it may not work out, because you just got to be able to enjoy them at a real low relational level, I think, for it to build. And here's the other thing. If you're working with 150 girls, you're not going to have close relationship with 150 girls. Like, they'll know they can come to you in a difficult time, but like, you just have to realize some people are going to be drawn to, you know, other leaders in their lives. And that's great. We just want everybody to have safe places.
Yeah, man. So I'm an Enneagram 1. Okay. And for me, it's all about improving. Like, what do we have? Let's make it better, right?
That's right.
And my daughter is an Enneagram 8. And so she's like, oh, what do you want me to do? I'm going to do the opposite.
That's right.
So she'll push back just to push. She likes the push.
I'm going to tell you that whatever needs to fire in order for me to feel like inner just delight in an individual is a teenage girl who's an Enneagram 8. My goodness. the best.
Tell me more.
Because here's the deal. And I've talked to a couple of people recently who have teenage daughters who are Enneagram 8s, and they were trying to help them navigate some things they were dealing with. I was like, listen, she's going to be fine, because what she's going to do is her boundaries are going to be real clear to her. Like, this is not okay. And so if her boundary says this is not okay, you let her run with that. It's not okay. And I think that a lot of times, you know, as moms, our tendency is like, well, we need to, can we just soften those edges a little bit? like maybe don't be quite so demanding or quite so direct. Listen, I say run with it, because it's going to be her superpower when she gets older. And so, yeah, you're there to coach and to say like, well, you know, I'm so glad that you spoke your mind. Maybe just in the interest of long-term relational health, maybe, you know, you don't have to say it quite like that, but I just think a teenage girl who's an Enneagram 8 is going to know who she is. She is not going to feel pressure to bend and change with
none.
Whatever's going on around her. So whatever, wherever she lands, let's say at 19, at 20 and 21, she's going to be ready to go. She's going to be ready to move right through that.
That's such a good point.
Mm-hmm. An Enneagram 8 who's a girl, it's not always going to be fully appreciated in a group of teenage girls. No. Because she's not going to let anybody have anything in terms of if they're making a bad decision and she knows it's a bad decision, she's not going to let them walk blindly into that thing. But golly, I mean, that strength is just phenomenal. I don't know. I love to see it at work. There's so much leadership there. And so it's just figuring out the best way to channel it.
That's true. Yeah. I really did think, I can't wait to have kids and like make them great.
Yeah.
And the Lord was like, oh, sweetie. Here's Lane Thomas. You're going to make her do anything.
Oh, gosh. And I will say, I'm a 9, and my probably the Enneagram type I am most drawn to are 8s. 8s say all the things I think but would never say out loud. And I have an 8 wing. So if I feel really strongly about something, I'll come in pretty hard on that thing. But okay. But just an 8 moving through life is just I could watch it like a movie. It delights me.
Oh man, I love that that's a perspective, because I see a bull in a china shop and I'm like, yeah. Can you please just don't? You know what I mean? It's just hard for me to just don't everything, anything, right, ever. Right. It's not a very warm and cozy environment to grow up in as an 8, I'm sure.
Right, right. Whatever's next for her, she'll kill it. She will. And I mean that in a good way, Emily. I don't mean
no, that. No, I see. Like, God doesn't make mistakes, but wow, he's using her in a big way in my life.
You as a 1 and her as an 8, that dynamic has to get real fun sometimes. It's
Every couple, especially around our cycles.
Well, because you're not going to be able to manage that, right? You're not going to be able. She's not going to follow the rules. She's not going to do all the little things maybe that you expect of her, that other people expect of her, because she's going to do it the way she thinks is the best way to do it.
100%. Ever since she was a little girl, I've realized she really resents the fact that I'm trying to parent her. She looks at me like, how dare you,
She ma'am? Has some better ideas about how you can do that.
Yep. Anyway, okay. So as far as teenage girls, you wrote a devotional for them. Well, 2 of them, actually, right?
Yes.
Grace Upon Grace.
Yes.
Is the one that just came out. And I have to tell you that as an Enneagram 8, trying to help her with her spiritual development, mm-hmm. like, I'm like, let's journal. Why don't we do it each morning, you know? And so she's like, oh, you'd like me to do it in the morning? I'll do it at night. You'd like me to let you know what I'm learning? You aren't even going to know if I ever did it or not. And so she refuses to write. Like, using her hands is a punishment. And so I gave her your devotional, and I was like, hey, would you mind, you know, what about this? First of all, because she's kind of a tomboy. And again, if it's pink and has butterflies and even a slightest hint of a curly cue,
sure.
She's like, no. And so I love that it's not girly. Mm-hmm,
thank you.
The appearance.
That was super intentional, by the way. That
really?
Was, yeah. Oh, yeah. When I wrote the first one, when I wrote All in All, and this was back in like 2016, the first time I met with my publisher, I was like, here's the deal. this needs to look like a book that could sit out in somebody's house for a long time, or like somebody could take it to college or take it to their first apartment, and it could sit there and nobody would go like, "Ooh, that must be a devotional book for teenage girls." Yeah. I wanted it to look timeless, and I didn't want it to look like, not that there's anything wrong with this at all, but I didn't want it to look so overtly like a teenage girl's devotional book. That's the best way I know how to say it. I just wanted it to look like a book.
Yeah. And it's gorgeous, and it's not, there's no unicorns on it at all.
Nary a unicorn.
Nary a unicorn. Uh-huh. So I said, "Hey, remember that devotional I gave you?" And, I said, "Have you done it?" Like, just because I'm interviewing the author and I was curious what you thought. She goes, "You know, I really like it because it's believable. Like, the stories seem like they could have actually happened."
They actually did happen, those stories.
So she's like, it's not far-fetched. And I think that the stories are real. I like it. Good. So anyway.
That makes me happy.
Does this happen in your house? It does in mine. Every time I ask my kids how school was, if they ever answer, they mumble, "It's fine." And actually, when it comes out later, you know, maybe in those late night conversations that we like to have, it's really not about the subjects. They're fairly uninspired in that aspect. It's about the relationships. So I was trying to figure out what excites them. What are they really interested in learning? And then we discovered OutSchool. OutSchool offers the largest variety of live, interactive online classes for kids pre-K through high school. Classes are actually fun, and they cover every interest that you can think of, and some that you can't, like video game design, cartoon animation, playing an instrument, speaking a language, creative writing, and so much more. There's something for every kid. Their classes are super affordable. You can choose the size and group that works best for your child, giving them the experience that's best for them. OutSchool even has one-on-one classes. Classes bring kids together around their shared passions and interests, helping them fall in love with learning, make real connections, and new friends. OutSchool makes it easy for kids to learn what they love, which is a gift that gives back to them over and over again for their whole lives. OutSchool has helped kids like the Smith kids get excited about learning, and they can help yours too. To learn more about OutSchool and what they have to offer and save $15 off your child's first class, go to outschool.com/MSW and use code MSW. That's code MSW at outschool.com/MSW to save $15 off your child's first class, outschool.com/MSW.
Now, I wrote Grace Upon Grace. I started it during quarantine. And so there was a point where I thought every one of these devotionals is going to say, "Today on my walk." This morning I went on a walk, and because that was the only sort of teachable place in my life at the time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I finished it last winter. And so I did have a little bit of time to get outside of just the park, but that makes me really happy. I wrote the first one after I started working with the girls at school, just because I don't know, I just kind of see them where they were living. And just wanting to kind of come in with the intersection of real life and faith. And so all the stories in there actually happened. with Grace Upon Grace, I was mindful that people might read it who were not teenagers. So I kind of wrote it. I mean, it's absolutely for older teenage girls, but I also wrote it knowing that maybe their moms might read it with them, or maybe somebody who was older might just want a devotional book for 100 days. And so it's not quite as teenage girl specific. Yeah. I don't know. That's just kind of, I think, where God teaches me is so many times. I mean, obviously through scripture, but in terms of just real life, day to day, watching Justin Timberlake and Chris Stapleton perform on the CMA Awards, or, you know, walking past a tree that's been cut down when I'm at the park. Just real life stuff. And so my hope is that when women of any age read it, is it doesn't feel like something aspirational. Like, you know, I trust that you're reading this devotional during your 45 minute quiet time. You know, I want it to feel like, hey, just in our regular real lives, we can see God, we can meet God, we can know God, and we can be loved by God just in the most average everyday things.
Yeah, I love that.
Thanks.
Thank you for writing those things. I think as a mom who doesn't know exactly what's getting in when I try to talk about spiritual things, you know what I mean? But I don't know, as many ways to teach them as possible.
Just to be an encouraging voice, I think. That's what I hope Alex finds in his life. I just want him to intersect with as many encouraging voices as he can. And I think, especially because I was a mom who thought when he was little that I was really going to be able to control his environment. I was going to be able to control the things that he was exposed to. I was going to be able to control. Oh, yeah. And guess what? That is not how it goes.
Nope.
And they really do have to figure it out for themselves. And more than anything, I hope it will just be something that reminds young women or older women that God made them with great intention and loves them completely. And that's it.
Like already.
Yeah, already. As is, right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes me think of as is, like, you know, the tags on something that has, like, it's not perfect. It's got, like, a little lipstick stain on it or a little hole in the back or whatever.
Yeah.
I love that.
I saw one of those yesterday at Home Goods. As is.
And sometimes you're like, it's perfect.
It's perfect. Just, that's exactly right. It's perfect, just as it is.
I love it. Okay, so at the end of our show, we typically do something called Giving Me Life and Killing Me Softly. Mm-hmm. Something that you're loving and something that you're that's really not your favorite right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm springing this on you. You didn't even know about it.
I'm delighted to think through this.
So what's killing you softly right now?
Oh, gosh. I mean, can I just be super superficial with it?
It needs to be out of your reading of the Bible this morning. Just kidding.
In the book of Ecclesiastes. No, I'm going to say, and I talked about this a little bit on our podcast, the podcast that I did with Melanie a couple weeks ago. But I have developed some strong resentment that I'm having a hard time dealing with. Directed towards a Chick-fil-A close to my house.
Sorry, I listened to that one, but tell me.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not getting, what my point is, I'm not getting over it. I feel like Chick-fil-A is so good at problem solving. They're not, but for some reason, the drive-through situation at this particular Chick-fil-A, and it's the kind of thing where I will tell myself, this is dumb. Like, you shouldn't have this much emotion. And clearly, this is about something besides just the Chick-fil-A. It's not about Chick-fil-A. It's about something deeper. I get that. Whatever. But I don't think I should have to circle a restaurant 3 times in order to get my salad and a fruit cup. You know, like, right. Can we do something? Can we figure this out? Can we do something differently?
I feel like they do so good at their drive-thrus. What is this one just bad?
It's on a small lot. The lot is way too small for the amount of traffic that Chick-fil-A has. They do their best, Emily. They do their best.
It's not good enough for Sophie Hudson.
Well, no, it's inefficient. Like, it's just,
got it.
They either need to limit the number of people who can come through the drive-thru. I have a lot of thoughts about it. I appreciate the hard work they're doing, but I find that I just avoid it. You know, like, normally I might stop 3 for a lemonade. But I can't do it to myself right now because I'm going to get frustrated by the amount of traffic. But good for them for having a healthy business, I guess.
Do you have other options?
Oh, yeah. There's another Chick-fil-A not far away for sure. I mean, you know, and it seems to move a little quicker there. I won't go into it. Nobody cares. But I think it's just because of the location of this one. It draws traffic from 2 major roadways. And so everybody trying to get in there is a little bit of a hassle. So that's killing me softly a little bit. I think, though, that maybe that's about it. I don't feel any big frustration about anything else right now. So,
okay. I have COVID right now.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I threw my back out.
Oh.
And before I got COVID and threw my back out, we got a puppy.
Oh, no.
So I feel like, and I'm reading through Job, so I kind of...
Oh, no. Well, feels right, though, right?
I know. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, I'm getting a little sense of what he might be going through. It's all crashing down around me on all sides.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's fine. So what's giving you life?
Oh, gosh. I feel a lot of things, I feel like. I really, really love my walks. I walk just about every day. I'm not walking a day because I'm going to Pilates, which is a new thing.
Oh, tell me.
That's given me life a little bit. Like, just trying something new.
Yeah. Do you go to gym?
It's just a Pilates studio. And ew. So I didn't really think this would be a phase in my life that would be filled with, like, trying a lot of new things. But I find that I'm enjoying new things. I'm enjoying, like, so I'm really enjoying, like, trying this new Pilates thing. Mm-hmm. I like to think I'm a person who likes change. People like to point out to me that I'm actually not. Okay. So to kind of embrace something new feels a little different to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's kind of fun. And so I'm super excited about going today just because I feel like I'm learning something new.
How many times have you gone?
Oh, this is only my second time, Emily.
Okay. Were you really sore the first time?
I was really sore. I was sore in places I forgot existed, is what I will tell you.
What draws you to that?
To do Pilates? I think because I did ballet when I was growing up. And so I like the idea, like the flexibility of it. I like the idea of just, it's kind of gentle exercise and how it stretches and elongates. It feels like something I won't regret, you know?
Like yes, that's good. Yep. I can't do jumping, things like that.
I'm it like, feels like it will serve me well as I age, as opposed to, you know, like making me get up and bend over. So it just feels like it's a healthy thing to do at this. I mean, I think it would be for any age, but it just feels like a healthy thing to kind of tack on to the walking. Because so having something new like that is giving me life right now. I will say this too. Last week, just kind of out and about running errands, everywhere I went, I felt like I ran into a family or a person who I'd worked with at school. So I think in the middle of the transition, this ending in my life was significant, and it was a lot for me to process, but it's been really sweet to see that the relationships are still there and that I can continue to enjoy those people and that sense of community that I had. I can continue to enjoy it even if I'm not there. And that, for my peace-loving personality, and I'm kind of hyper-relational, that's been a real sweet comfort and a really sweet gift, you know, as I'm kind of moving through something that's new to me. So
that's really good. I'm excited for your season.
Thanks. It's been really good and really instructive. I don't know. It feels continually like it's the right thing. So I'm grateful for that.
Oh, I love that for you. Are you going to do more writing? Is that the plan or?
Yeah. I mean, I think probably at some point this year I'll start on another book, but I kind of have found a little routine in terms of the podcast and how I work on that. And so right now, I feel like until Alex graduates, probably I'm just gonna take care of the podcast stuff, and I'm doing a little bit of speaking, not a whole lot, but mostly I just kind of want us to be available to soak up whatever is going on here. So
you're in a great place, it sounds like.
It's been really fun, and I didn't know how much fun it would be to be a mama away from school, because I've been with Alex at school since he was in seventh grade. We've been on the same campus, and I thought I'm just going to feel all the time like I miss out. But it's been really fun to sit on this side of it. It's been really fun to enjoy other parents as a parent and not as somebody who works at school. So I'm just kind of going to plant my feet pretty firmly right here at this house for right now, and then maybe get back into writing as I move into the spring.
Do you know ahead of time what your books are going to be, or do you just kind of write and see what happens?
Now, I actually have a pretty good idea. I think I know what I'm going to write about this next time, because I kind of love that part of the writing process. To me, it's one of the most fun parts of it. It's kind of figuring out what theme seems to be running through life, what seems to be coming up over and over again. And so I have a rough outline for the book I want to write next. And what's weird is I almost always start with a title. Like, I'll get a title.
Interesting.
And then I'll go, oh, okay, that's the book. And so I've had two different titles pop in my head for this next one. And I don't know what's going to land, but that's been the case every single time, is I've started with a title. And even with these
titles are great.
Oh, thanks. Even with these devotional books, like, I originally kind of envisioned the devotional books as being, there being three of them. I don't know if I'll ever write, after I write that second one, I don't know that I'll write a third. But but I knew from the beginning, okay, here are the three titles of those three books. And so All in All, Grace Upon Grace. And then I have a title for a third one that may never get written. So,
but you've got it in your back pocket.
Yeah. 100 devotionals is a lot. So
100
daily devotionals is a lot. It doesn't seem like a lot. And then when you get on 35 and you're like, I've got 65 more to go.
I've said everything I know how to say.
Lord, would you teach me a lesson? Lord.
That's Lord, a dangerous prayer.
Is there meaning in this pile of Cheez-Its, Lord?
I can't take another walk.
I can't take another walk, Lord. I've already been out there twice today. Lord, so would you speak through the snack crackers? Uh-huh. That's where, I mean, you really do. You get in that kind of space. So it may be a few years before the third one comes around.
Oh, yeah. I would say you need a break. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, Sophie, thank you for sharing your heart and your just everything. I've enjoyed talking with you a lot this morning.
I've loved talking with you, too. I love keeping up with you on the Instagram. And I miss your daily stories, but
I need to do more. Well, I'm trying.
I get it. But you've got some things going on. But I do. I always love your stories and seeing what's going on with y'all. So, yay, Emily.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, was it so nice to hear Emily doing an interview again? Aww. I know, as a listener, that's something that I've been looking forward to. So, yay for all of us. So, we hope you enjoyed that episode with Sophie. You can find her at boomama.net and on Instagram at boomama205.
So, what will your strategy to struggle well this week be based on what Sophie said? Sophie talked about how when our kids get older, we are kind of like the coach. I think when we have little kids, we think we can shape them and we just can't. We kind of just coach, stand back, watch what they're up to, and then give feedback as needed. That was a good strategy to struggle well. I try to get too involved and it turns into a fight. Because turns out they're not as interested in my opinion as I am. So that's new. Yeah. Maybe you struggle well by making sure with your kiddos, especially your adolescent girls who we are just dying to bond with, that we bond over positive things that are healthy relationally and not negative things that are unhealthy, like talking bad about other people who are driving us crazy, because we know that that gets them fired up too. I thought that was a really good point. Maybe you struggle well by getting your teen girl the devotional that she just wrote called Grace Upon Grace. It does have Lane Thomas's approval that it is not girly and that it is believable. And if Lane Thomas likes a devotional, I promise you, your daughter will like it too.
I gotta say, that's high praise.
It surely is. And finally, maybe you struggle well this week by remembering, like Sophie says in her devotional and the whole point of the Grace Upon Grace devotional, that God loves you as is, like right now, even with the toilet paper sticking out of the back of your pants and your morning breath, and you don't remember when you took a shower last time. He loves you right now, right as you are. Love that.
We will be back next week over on Patreon. So if you don't want to miss a week of Struggling Well, come join us over there. Patreon.com/momstrugglingwell.
Bye.
Bye.
Because we're all in this together. You're just moms struggling well.
I'm so familiar with all these things. Mm-hmm.
You know what's so sad is, like, this is my sixth year of having a podcast, and every time it's like the first time.
How about Melanie and I started our podcast in 2007, and last week I recorded a whole episode without my microphone, like, actually connected to the computer. So this is a safe place, so Emily, is what I'm telling you. I love
it. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.